This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. At this hour, Donald Trump is addressing the Republican National Convention in the city of Milwaukee just 5 days after surviving an assassination attempt. He will accept his party's presidential nomination in a speech designed to unify his party behind his third consecutive White House bid. Trump's appearance comes as a second Senate Democrat is urging President Joe Biden to drop out of the race. We get more on that story from the AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
Montana's John Tester is in his own tight re-election bid and says the president should bow out. That comes with Democrats at the highest levels making a push for the president to rethink his bid. Former President Obama has privately expressed concerns to allies about his ex-running mate's prospects, and former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has privately told the president that Democrats could lose their chance to retake the House if he stays in.
Sagar Magani reporting. Vice President Kamala Harris questioned on Thursday Republicans' attempts to portray themselves as the party of unity.
In recent days, they've been trying to portray themselves as the party of unity. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. If you claim to stand for unity, you need to do more than just use the word.
Donald Trump claimed earlier this week his convention speech would be toned down following a shooter's attempt to take his life on Saturday. But Harris, campaigning on Thursday, said you cannot claim you stand for unity if you're pushing an agenda that deprives whole groups of Americans of basic freedoms, opportunity, and dignity. As always, for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. Court officials say closing arguments in the espionage trial of U.S. journalist Evan Gershkovich will be held Friday as the proceedings picked up speed in a case that has seen the reporter held in pretrial custody for more than a year. AP correspondent Karen Chambas reports.
A U.S. journalist has appeared at a second trial in Russia for espionage charges, while talks of a prisoner exchange between Russia and the U.S. go on behind the scenes. Gershkovich is accused of gathering information for the U.S. while on a reporting trip in Yekaterinburg, where he was arrested. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said that Moscow and Washington's intelligence services are discussing an exchange involving Gershkovich, according to Russian state news agency TASS. Russia has previously signaled the possibility of a swap involving Gershkovich, but it says a verdict, which could take months, would have to come first. Even after a verdict, any release could still take months or years. I'm Karen Chamas.
Britain let down its citizens by leaving the nation ill-prepared for the COVID-19 pandemic. That's what a public inquiry concluded in a scathing report on Thursday. We get the details from Reuters correspondent Emma Jill.
Former Judge Heather Hallett served as the inquiry chair.
In 2019, it was widely believed in the United Kingdom and abroad that the UK was not only properly prepared, but was one of the best prepared countries in the world to respond to a pandemic. This belief was dangerously mistaken.
Meanwhile, the nation's finances are still suffering. Hallett's report found there was a lack of adequate leadership with groupthink clouding expert advice.
Officials in the Central African Republic say at least 300 rebels have dropped their case against the rebels. They laid down their arms, there is. And we're going to have details on that story coming up in our next hour. Meantime, the largest housing provider for unaccompanied migrant children has been accused of severe, pervasive, and unwelcome sexual abuse and harassment of children in its care. The U.S. Justice Department said Thursday the Southwest key employees, including supervisors, have abused children in its care since at least 2015. Alleged offenses include rape, touching and soliciting sex, and nude photos. And for details on much more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former President Trump addresses delegates at the Republican Party National Convention.
I am running to be president for all of America, not half of America. So tonight, with faith and devotion, I proudly accept your nomination for President of the United States. Thank you.
Central African Republic officials say 300 rebels disarm as the country races to organize local elections. The Eswatini government defends a 43-year jail sentence for two members of parliament. The Nigerian government and labor unions agreed on an estimated $50 a month minimum wage.
It's one thing to have an agreement, it's another tough call having it implemented. So our energies will now be geared towards having this implemented.
And recent Africa internet outages highlighted the urgent need for strengthening infrastructure. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former President Donald Trump addressed the delegates at the 2024 Republican Party National Convention on Thursday night as he officially accepted his second nomination in the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. This was his first public speech since he survived an assassination attempt a week ago in Pennsylvania. The speech has been highlighted or anticipated, especially since the former president promised to preach national unity.
So tonight, I make this pledge to the great people of America. I will end the devastating inflation crisis immediately, bring down interest rates, and lower the cost of energy. We will drill, baby, drill. Can you believe what they're doing? But by doing that, we will lead a large-scale decline in prices. Prices will start to come down. Energy raised it. They took our energy policies and destroyed them. Then they immediately went back to them, but by that time, so much was lost. But we will do it at levels that nobody's ever seen before, and we'll end lots of different things. We'll start paying off debt and start lowering taxes even further. We gave you the largest tax cut. We'll do it more. You know, people don't realize I brought taxes way down, way, way down, and yet we took in more revenues the following year than we did when the tax rate was much higher. Most people said, how did you do that? Because it was incentive. Everybody was coming to the country. They were bringing back billions and billions of dollars into our country. The companies made it impossible to bring it back. The tax rate was too high, and the legal complications were far too great. I changed both of them, and hundreds of billions of dollars by Apple and so many other companies were brought back into our nation, and we had an economy the likes of which nobody, no nation had ever seen. China, we were beating them at levels that were incredible. And they know it. They know it. We'll do it again, but we'll do it even better. I will end the illegal immigration crisis by closing our border and finishing the wall, most of which I've already built. On the wall, we were dealing with a very difficult Congress. And I said, oh, that's okay. We won't go to Congress. I call it an invasion. We gave our military almost $800 billion. I said, I'm going to take a little of that money because this is an invasion. And we built, most of the wall is already built. And we built it through using the funds because what's better than that? We have to stop the invasion into our country that's killing hundreds of thousands of people a year. We're not going to let that happen. I will end every single international crisis that the current administration has created, including the horrible war with Russia and Ukraine, which would have never happened if I was president, and the war caused by the attack on Israel, which would have never happened if I was president. Iran was broke. Iran had no money. Now Iran has $250 billion. They made it all over the last 2.5 years. They were broke. I watched the other day on a show called Deface the Nation. Has anyone seen it? And they had a congressman who was a Democrat say, well, whether you like him or not, Iran was broke dealing with Trump. I told China and other countries, if you buy from Iran, we will not let you do any business in this country, and we will put tariffs on every product you do send in of 100% or more. And they said to me, well, I think that's about it. They weren't going to buy any oil. And they were ready to make a deal. Iran was going to make a deal with us. And then we had that horrible, horrible result that we'll never let happen again. The election result, we're never going to let that happen again. They used COVID to cheat. We're never going to let it happen again. And they took off all the sanctions and they did everything possible for Iran. And now Iran is very close to having a nuclear weapon, which would have never happened. This is a shame what this administration, the damage that this administration has done. And I say it often, if you took the 10 worst presidents in the history of the United States, think of it, the 10 worst, added them up, they will not have done the damage that Biden has done. Only going to use the term once. Biden, I'm not going to use the name anymore, just one time. The damage that he's done to this country is unthinkable. It's unthinkable. Together we will restore vision, strength, competence, and we're going to have a thing called common sense making most of our decisions, actually. It's all common sense. Just a few short years ago under my presidency, we had the most secure border and best economy in the history of our country, in the history of the world. We had the greatest economy in the history of the world. We had never done anything like it. We were beating every country, including China, by leaps and bounds. Nobody had seen anything like it. We had no inflation. Soaring incomes were going. Nobody can believe it. You can't believe what happened 4 years ago is happening now in reverse. And the world was at peace. Inflation has been a killer for our country. No matter what you make it, it doesn't matter because inflation is eating you alive. People that were putting away money, they were making great wages, the highest they've ever made, but they were putting away a lot of money. Now they are just being destroyed. They're not putting away anything. They're barely living. They're going into savings accounts. They're taking out their money to live because of inflation. Inflation, remember, it's called a country buster. You can go back to Germany from 100 years ago. You can go back to any country that suffered great inflation. We've suffered the worst inflation we've ever had. But go back and see what's happened to those countries. We've had the worst inflation we've ever had under this person. But in less than 4 years, our opponents have turned incredible success into unparalleled tragedy and failure. It's been a tremendous failure. Today, our cities are flooded with illegal aliens. Americans are being squeezed out of the labor force and their jobs are taken. And by the way, you know who's taking the jobs that are created? 107% of those jobs are taken by illegal aliens. And you know who's being hurt the most by millions of people pouring into our country? The black population and the Hispanic population, because they're taking the jobs from our black population, our Hispanic population, and they're also taking them from unions. The unions are suffering because of it. Thank you. Thank you. I like you too. Thank you very much.
Inflation has wiped out the life. Former President Donald Trump addressing delegates at the 2024 Republican Party National Convention on Thursday night. Joining us now live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee is VOA's Carol Van Dam. Good morning to you, Carol, and welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Thanks, James. And, you know, he's still talking. I'm on the floor, so hopefully you can hear me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Yes, I can hear.
So how do you think the former president's speech was received by the convention audience?
Very well indeed. There's just, you know, when it started, it was like you could hear a pin drop between his words. No other sounds. And there's thousands of people in here. You can tell they're just so enamored with this man and fully support whatever he says. And what he has said tonight was sometimes a little more negative than what, you know, was going to be the idea this week with toning down the rhetoric. And, you know, he said he's going to be the one to save the democracy for the future of this country. You know, he said that the President Joe Biden has made things tons worse for, you know, the working class. And he also said that illegal immigration is a huge problem, that the tens of thousands of illegal immigrants are flooding this country, and he's going to turn this thing around.
And Carol, what specific topic, as you said, or issue did they in the speech? Do you think drew the most applause from the delegates?
When he talked about, you know, making America strong again, and you know, kicking out the illegal immigrants, but also foreign policy. He did talk about how, you know, we've got to get rid of all these Chinese imports, and he's going to slap tariffs on a lot of the foreign imports, and he's going to make it so that, you know, the other countries that are our foes fear us again. And that was part of a kind of a slick film that they showed before Mr. Trump took to the stage, you know, saying that our foes don't fear us, that, you know, we appear weak. And he says he's the man that's going to turn that around. In that film, they also called him a folk hero.
Well, thank you so much again, Carol. We do appreciate very much speaking with you.
My pleasure.
That's viewers Carol Van Dam speaking with us live from the Republican Party National Convention in Milwaukee. Also joining us live from Milwaukee is Zimbabwe-born journalist and foreign policy analyst Pearl Matibe. Pearl, good morning to you.
Good evening to you here from Milwaukee. Yes, good morning to your audiences.
Thank you so much again, Pearl. So nice to have you on. President Trump's speech had been billed as a unity speech. Did the former president sound or reconciliatory in his speech, from your perspective?
From my perspective, I think that the audience certainly perceived him as a call to unity, but he did highlight that his former first lady, Melania Trump, had written a letter following the assassination attempt on his life, and that in that letter he elevated it, that it was worthy of being part of the Republican National platform, just because her letter was a call for national unity. So he threaded in the letter from the former First Lady, Melania Trump, and yes, unity, not only from President Trump, but throughout the 4 days, I interacted with many of senior Republican national party officials like Kevin McCarthy, Rince Priebus, Mr. Grendel, so many individuals that I interacted with during the week, who all seem to coalesce around him with this message of unity. Among those people were also, you know, Rodney Davis, Scott Clark. These are, you know, legislators, some of them. Kevin McCarthy, I already mentioned, former ambassador, as well, officials from Michigan. And then this pinnacle way that Trump has reached out on this unity. And to begin the message of unity, he called for a moment of silence for the one person that lost his life, whose family sent along his fire helmet. And so that kind of was an emotional symbolism that helped draw the crowd to accept and sort of grasp this message of unity. So you're absolutely correct. The message of unity has been threaded in from day one across these 4 days of the Republican National Convention here in Milwaukee. It has really been a key thing that I've seen consistently as a strength. I think it is, let me emphasize, it has been an intentional strategy.
Pearl, thank you so much again for joining us on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was Zimbabwe-born journalist and foreign policy analyst Pearl Matibe speaking with us live from the Republican Party convention in Milwaukee. President Joe Biden is facing physical and political isolation on Thursday as he deals with COVID at a critical junction of his campaign, and more Democrats urge him to step aside as the party's nominee. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadikasurare has this report.
Republicans are pledging unity and support behind their presidential nominee, former President Donald Trump, during their national convention this week. For President Joe Biden, it's a lonelier scene. He is isolating in his home in Delaware following a positive COVID test. This amid calls from prominent Democrats for him to step down. Analysts say it's looking grim for the president. Larry Sabato, University of Virginia Center for Politics, via Skype.
If Democrats can't even decide whether Biden is really in trouble or not, and if he is, how to get him out of the race, and if they get him out of the race, who should replace him and how. Now, that's pretty fundamental. Meanwhile, the Republicans have gotten their act together. They've had a great convention, and Donald Trump, because in part of the assassination attempt, probably has more public support than he ever has had.
Privately, the president is reportedly listening to concerns. Publicly, he is resisting calls to step aside.
I've demonstrated that I know how to get things done for the country, in spite of the fact they're told we couldn't get it done. But there's more to do, and I'm reluctant to walk away from that.
65% of Democrats say Biden should step aside, according to an AP NORC poll. American University presidential historian Alan Lichtman.
It is the height of folly and ignorance to claim you know, based on the polls, which constantly change, who's going to win and who's going to lose, and you should force candidates out just because you think they can't win.
American University presidential historian Alan Lichtman's Keys to the White House System has accurately predicted all but one U.S. election results since 1984. He says Democrats should stick with Biden. Lichtman's system ignores polling, including that 70% of Americans said they are not confident that Biden has the mental capacity to be president. For Trump, it's 51%. What happens now is anybody's guess. If Biden agrees to step aside, the most orderly scenario would be for him to endorse an alternative candidate. Vice President Kamala Harris would be a logical choice, at least financially, because as part of the Biden-Harris ticket, she would inherit their campaign war chest. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
The Nigerian government and the country's labor unions have agreed on a 70,000 naira, or about $50 a month, pay raise. Emmanuel Obuaja is the Secretary General of the Nigeria Labour Congress. He tells me that while labour did not get everything it had wanted, it is satisfied with the agreement.
It was a tough call for him because the subnationals, the state governors, have put loads of pressure to say majority of them won't be able to pay 60,000. Talk less of 62,000. So for the president to raise the bar to 70 was a huge call on his part. But he said he was going to find a way to relate with them and provide guidance for them to be able to meet with that, because clearly it's the right thing to do. 60,000, 62,000, even 70,000 in present-day Nigeria basically will give you nothing. It will give an individual nothing, talk less of a working family. But in the circumstance, it's a takeoff point because fortunately, we have also brought down the waiting time for negotiations to be due from 5 years to 3 years. So when we combine both, then it shows some decent step forward.
So is this what labor wanted?
Definitely not. But in negotiation, it's not exactly about what we want, but what we're able to get out in the instance. They never even wanted to move in this direction. So it's like getting water out of stone. So for us, it amounts to the African adage that instead of the bush meat to run away fully, then you can get the tail.
What does this mean now for this strike that labor has been engaged in? Is the strike now permanently over?
Yeah, what we're going to be striking about now will be implementation. Because it's one thing to have an agreement, it's another tough call having it implemented. So our energies would not be geared towards having this implemented. Because even though it's a law, people are want to preach the law. So our energies will not be geared towards seeing its implementation.
Emmanuel Obuaja is the Secretary General of the Nigeria Labour Congress. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abuja. For Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with athletics. The Athletes Village for the Paris Olympics and Paralympics officially opened and welcomed its first inhabitants on Thursday. The village to the north of Paris will house nearly 14,500 people, including 9,000 athletes at its peak. 7 days before the opening ceremony, the first team members to arrive were from Australia and Brazil. Organizers are proud of offering a village that they say does not require air conditioning to keep residents cool, with temperatures inside set to be at least 6 degrees Celsius lower than outside in summer. Staying with athletics, the National Olympic Committee of Kenya has published 161 names of the country's delegation to this year's Paris Olympic Games, following a directive from the immediate former Sports Cabinet Secretary Ababu Nawamba. The contingent, which will be led by Sports Principal Secretary Peter Toome, has 81 athletes, 43 coaching and medical staff, while the remaining 37 members comprises media and NOC Kenya representatives. Acting Sports Cabinet Secretary Peter Toome, while giving Team Kenya's preparedness update on Thursday, said Kenya has prepared the best athletes for the Paris Olympics.
We are ready, and the team that we have been able to prepare to go to Paris is the best that we had. The preparations have been good. We had a team that is seated here that was in charge of preparing the same and organizing the logistics.
And now to rugby, where all is now set for Uganda to host the 2024 Rugby Africa Men's Cup. Kenya, Namibia, Cote d'Ivoire, Senegal and Algeria are among the countries already in Kampala. The tournament will serve as the first stage of the 2027 Men's Rugby World Cup qualifiers for the African region. It will be played following a straight knockout format for the quarterfinal stage. It will open on Saturday, July 20th, with the defending champions Namibia taking on Burkina Faso, before host Uganda will face Zimbabwe in the last quarterfinal. Uganda Rugby Union assistant coach is Leonard Lubambula.
Well, I think we're good. Healthy-wise, the team is good. Most of the players are good. A few players from the sevens are set up, joined in over the weekend, and today is just a polishing on a few things.
And now to football, where the Namibia Football Association is addressing a critical gap in coaching education by organizing a refresher course for A-licensed coaches, marking a significant update since their last CAF license class way back in 2014. Jacqueline Chipanga, a technical director at the Namibia Football Association, said the refresher course will prepare Namibia coaches for more continental competitive roles in the future. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, July 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again Monday morning.